Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic today, Tim. Love being back here in the saddle. We were actually in New York City, and that is the subject of this particular episode. But before we get into that, I hope all those listeners with their earbuds in right now, I hope you're doing whatever you're doing and you got a smile on your face. I hope you're doing well. Tim, you got sort of a half smile on your face right now. My concern level is raised a bit. Are you okay? How are you today?
I am doing great. I'm excited about this episode. Lance, we visited New York City and the offices of CrimeCon to record this episode with Kevin Balfe and Elise Powers of CrimeCon. They're kind of like old friends at this point, seeing that we've known them since 2017. This is just a fun conversation.
And we mentioned this during our conversation with Kevin and Elise way back in the day when CrimeCon started. We had done a recap episode with them, and we wanted to keep that going. We wanted to sort of make that a tradition. So after a CrimeCon, a few weeks go by, we visit them, and they talk about how the event went, if there was anything that could have been done differently, all the things that went well, and we have a couple of laughs, and then we talk about future crime cons, and then we get interrupted by COVID, so that didn't play out the way we wanted to. All that being said, we're back. I didn't realize how much fun it was going to be and how relieved I was that we are back doing these crime con recaps again, so hopefully this is going to be one of many, and it's an excellent conversation, and you get some insight not only into what happened in Vegas, but just the overall planning of an event of this size.
The last event in Las Vegas had about 5,000 attendees, so that is a very large event. A lot goes into it. It is kind of shocking to hear. So you can check out CrimeCon and what they do at crimecon.com. Make sure to follow them on social media as well.
And get that hashtag going. And what hashtag am I talking about? You'll understand a little later, but it's hashtag crawlspacedinghy.
All right. And if you want to hear more about that, I'm sure we'll get into it on the Crawlspace Crypt. And that is on our premium feed. You can check that out at crawlspace.supportingcast.fm, where you get our bonus show called the Crawlspace Crypt. You also get every single episode of Crawlspace ad-free, and it's all for the price of a cup of coffee per month. Okay, everybody, follow us on social media at Crawlspace Pod or Crawlspace Podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. We're going to cut to commercial right here, and we'll be right back with Kevin and Elise.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
And we're back with Kevin and Elise.
We are here in New York City with Kevin Balfe and Elise Powers of CrimeCon.
You look thrilled to be here.
I'm so happy.
Elise always loves podcast tapings. It's her thing.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's been so long since we have gotten together post-CrimeCon, reaching out to see if you guys wanted to do this in the first place. I feel like you're approaching this with a whole new zest, like a whole new energy.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it all week.
Yeah, you clearly have. Right. We had a little technical difficulties where we were picking up the frequency of some bad radio station.
I thought it was Elise sabotaging this. I'll be honest, I think we all thought that that's what was happening.
Yeah, and she had this smile, and I thought we were going to see like a tape recorder under the table or something.
Yep. You guys are going to listen to this later and hear it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was you singing. Yeah, and you just tried to cause interference.
Yeah.
Well, cool. This is really fun. Nice to see you guys again. Tell us about CrimeCon 2022. How did it go?
What's that again?
CrimeCon 2022.
Oh, yeah. It's funny after these events, you know, it's you, I think maybe I've obviously never given birth to a child, but I've heard about pregnancy brain where you of like, you know, it's real bad. And, but then like, you're ready to have another one, you know, and it's like genetically so that the human race survives. I feel like a little bit with that with CrimeCon, we sort of go through a period where all of the hard work and, you know, tough times goes away so that we're ultimately willing to do another one. It was awesome. I mean, we were in Vegas this year, as you guys know, and a lot of people who had not left their house for, in some cases, many years came out, and I think it was a great weekend. You know, I think we had the best speaker list we've ever had, certainly the most people we've ever had, and tons of energy, maybe too much energy in some cases, but a lot of energy. Yeah, I thought it was a great way to get back out there after coming off of 2020, which was a, you know, full virtual postponement. 2021, we were in Austin with a half-size event. So this was our chance to really get back out there in a big way.
It had been like 2 years since we had been to a CrimeCon, and this one just like knocked our socks off, and that it was the most productive CrimeCon we've been to as far as like getting content, which is not the top priority, but it's like the easiest priority for us. You know what I mean? Like you're surrounded by your people.
Yeah.
But the speakers, the people that stand out to me are like David Robinson, whose son Daniel is still missing, very fresh case. And he was there, you know, literally took time out of a search for his son, understood how important it was to go to CrimeCon and spread the word.
Yeah.
That's like the thing that I'm talking about when I say that it's the most productive, not just for like content creators, but for people who are right in the middle of it, right in the middle of the reality of what you guys are trying to represent.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you saying that. I mean, we always often say on Sunday night after these events, really, we are like firefighters over these weekends, and that's not a good thing, right? But like, we're mostly putting out issues. This is happening in the ballroom, and this person has this problem. So we get very little awareness of what's going on in the event, even though we spent a year plus developing the event. And it's frustrating because these speakers that I have great relationships with and, you know, that we work so hard with before the event, they get there. In a lot of cases, I don't even get to meet them. I mean, that's how crazy it is sort of behind the scenes. So it's great afterwards to hear, you know, the people that were in podcast row and were on stage and obviously the attendees themselves, that they had a great experience, and productive is a good word. And yeah, it's really good to hear. So, and we've obviously, you guys have been to a bunch of them, so you can compare and contrast. With growth, there's always going to come new challenges and everything else. But with this platform, and you guys know what we're trying to do, just create a platform for the people that are in the thick of this and need help to get the word out and to spread the word. And so for us, the bigger it gets, the better chance we have of helping them. But it does create logistical challenges and experience challenges. And so those are the things, that's our job before Orlando, is to work hard on those and, you know, continue to make even a better experience as it gets larger.
What kind of logistical challenges, I guess, are you speaking about?
Oh, I mean, anything, right? So 5,000 people in that space, you're thinking about, okay, all the sessions get out at the same time. You've got people that are trying to get from ballroom 2 to ballroom 1, and it's going to be this big traffic jam in the hallways. You're trying to think about bathroom access for 5,000 people. I don't know if you guys use those bathrooms in Vegas. They were massive. Security, obviously, and how are speakers going to get back of house? And, you know, it's just everything. Our first year was Indianapolis, 800 people. It seemed real hard for us because we had never done one. But looking back, it was a very easy logistical event. You know, and now we spend most of our time on, okay, a speaker who's going to come in on noon on Saturday, how are they going to get their badge? They can't get in because we have security right at the front. So now, do they call somebody? Do they text somebody and they go meet them? Like, just weird things that you're trying to figure out that aren't necessarily additive to the experience. That's our challenge, is to get back of how do we give those logistical issues to our production company so that we can get back to really focusing on the event experience.
Yeah, 5,000 people with 5,000 human problems that
Correct.
Could possibly pop up. The details must be like exhausting. And I'm wondering how the two of you like delegate between both of you when it comes to these fire alarms that go off.
How do we delegate? Yeah, I think we have a good groove. So we all are forced to wear these walkies. Nothing good happens on the walkies. I mean, right? If someone's asking for you, it's not good. But it's funny because we have a channel, and like a lot of times we'll be in the staff office and you'll hear a call come in and we'll just like look at each other. It's like, who has to go take this? But I think for the most part, we have a pretty good division of responsibilities. Like Elise works a lot on the expo hall and podcasters and exhibitors, and I'm mostly working with speakers and sponsors. At a general level, that's how we break it up. And then right during the conference itself, it's really like all hands on deck. And we've got other support and other staff members as well that we've been able to tap. And our staff here that all kind of flies in just for these events, that really doesn't know what's going on at CrimeCon. We're just like, hey, you need to come to Vegas and go to the help desk. They all jump in, and definitely is a team effort.
Yeah. And we could use some more team members.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you find that to be the case every year? Wrapped up the events and you're like, here's where we could have used more help?
I mean, I always feel like we could, but now Austin didn't feel that way, which was the only event that you guys weren't at. Austin was very peaceful.
The big Vegas challenge was the NFL draft, right? The NFL draft comes in with, depending what estimates you want to hear, up to 1 million people directly outside of our hotel on the strip. The NFL does things at a level that is just, you know, beyond almost anyone else. And I've talked to a lot of even like security people who marvel at how much they spend on things. So we knew that from a safety standpoint and those sorts of things, like literally every three-letter agency, federal, state, local, was right there outside our door. The challenges that it created from transportation, all flight prices were way up, hotels were real tight in the city and expensive. And the number one being staffing. Anybody who was like a warm body in the Las Vegas metropolitan area who wanted to work that weekend, the NFL took them in and increased all the pay rates. So we had a really hard time getting frontline just event staff for our event because we were trying to compete with the NFL draft. And I would say for us, that was the biggest logistical issue this year is that all the volunteers we had, not all, but a good percentage of the volunteers we had signed up 2 days before the event were kind of like, I'm going to go work the draft and get paid instead, which is reasonable, but we lost a lot of volunteers. And so then we had to staff up late, just those sort of like how the sausage is made stuff that's boring, but that was really impactful for us in trying to cover that sort of staffing at the last minute. In fairness, we picked Vegas. Then COVID happens and the NFL draft has to get postponed. So they took our weekend, not vice versa. But I will never in a million years book a city within 100 miles of the NFL draft again. That's for sure.
That was one of the questions that a lot of people had. This is the same weekend as the NFL draft and no one knew, you know, who booked first. I think it seemed pretty obvious that because COVID happened and like all of that had to be like shuffled around, that if there was another alternative, it would have been taken.
Absolutely. Right. Plus, to be honest, the hotels, they could have had their way. They would have loved to have not have us there that weekend because they could sell those hotel rooms at $500-$700 a night versus our room block that had been booked many, many months prior at whatever we were at, $179 or something, right? So they're probably sitting there saying like, I wish these guys would go leave. And we're like, we're not leaving.
It did give Tim and I one of the funniest stories that we've ever had at a crime con where we tried to walk back or walk to an area where we could at least like pick up a cab to get back to our Airbnb. We couldn't get to where we could see we needed to get because things were shut down and we walked what we thought was a straight line through
the Bellagio.
And we came out kind of in this weird half moon. We're like, how did that happen? I thought we were walking in a straight line. And then we realized like we couldn't get a cab at all. We ended up hiring like a limo. It was like this like SUV stretch limo. And we managed to get out of there.
Only in Vegas. You get a limo to take you
so we got a
miles.
Good social media post of us in this giant limo.
Yeah. And we stopped at Walgreens for some water first.
Like, for him or for you guys? For us. Oh, what a
like,
guy.
We need some water. Do you mind swinging by that Walgreens? And so he pulls in the parking lot and does this like 18 point turn.
Going to Walgreens in a limo.
Yeah. In an obnoxious SUV stretch limo. So you said that it was boring how you make the sausage. I think a lot of people find it fascinating, especially the CrimeCon regulars, because everyone, when they show up, looks around and they're just like, how does all this come together?
Yeah. Well, if they figure it out, let us know.
Yeah. What happened in the days leading up to COVID and then having to reschedule Orlando back in
March 2020 is obviously when everything went down with COVID. And I mean, it's funny. I still remember being here in the office in February, my brother sending the first article of like, have you seen this? Right. But, you know, as things got more and more serious and everyone started taking it, I was still of the mind really and wrongly, obviously, in retrospect, but that like this was just being overblown by everybody. And so when March 13th, I think, was like the critical day, I had to be in Orlando for a site visit. And so we go and it was just so weird. I mean, it was I was already in Florida. Elise flies down and it was just like kind of a ghost town. We're pretending as though this event's happening. We had everything from our standpoint was locked in. We had a schedule locked. We had everything planned out. So we're kind of going through final prep, but like the thing is in the back of your head saying this may not happen. But the hotel is so invested in wanting these events to happen, right? Because they're making payroll. They've got the chefs and the event planners. And the idea that they would lose these events to them seemed impossible. I think it was maybe a week or so later where it just became obvious based on all the stuff that was coming out that we were gonna have to make a change. At that point, to me, the best change was let's just postpone this to the fall, bet in the summer this dies out, right? And we'll all get back at it.
Right, it was supposed to be a 2 week, 1 month thing.
Yeah, 2 weeks to stop the spread.
Right, 2 weeks. Right.
But calling the hotel, they were great, but it was definitely like no one wanted to admit from our side or their side or any of the other, of course, I feel so bad for them, the number of events that they were working with at that point in time. So we postponed it to the fall and then we all know what happened. That was not going to work out. And, you know, they've been great and got us a date in fall of 23, which we were really felt very fortunate to get. since we already had Vegas booked at that point, that was kind of our first available. And all the events from 20 were attempting to move. So now they're trying to move 40 different events to these future years. It's just what a nightmare.
And so you already had Vegas booked, so you weren't going to do the Orlando one in 2022.
So 23 was the first option and they had nothing in the spring. So we took our first fall dates.
Very cool.
It's a great venue down there. We've been there so many times now for site visits and we're having to start this up again. But have you guys ever been to this property, the World Center Marriott?
I don't think so.
Great property. Really nice. And really, I think like fans will really, attendees will really like it. The pools areas are incredible, but it's also got like its own little mini supermarket in it. The event space is all single level, sort of like Vegas, where very easy to get around once you get the lay of the land.
You mentioned David Robinson a few minutes ago, who's the father of Daniel Robinson, who's missing. How does that presentation come to you guys?
It does vary, but in that particular case, we reached out to him. You know, we obviously have seen what he's been doing on social and his passion. That's the exact type of person we're trying to host, right? I mean, how do we supplement your efforts? You're obviously have changed your life to devote it to this search. You know, to me, the interesting story there, like there's obviously, unfortunately, a lot of missing person stories and we could program an entire conference of those. To me, the story was him, right? Here's a father who refuses to just accept, that's maybe not the right word, but it refuses to just let this go and wants to be active. And I thought the way he's using social, the way he's using in-person searches and flyers, and that to me was the story. And so, yeah, we invited him and he jumped at it.
Yeah, he even relocated to do the search and he was close by Vegas. So I think it was a perfect fit.
Yeah. You know, I always say what we do on the stage for the hour is one thing and we can have as much or as little impact of that. It's everybody else at CrimeCon, right? So guys like you who have podcast titles, maybe want to talk to them. There's media there that interviews them. And the outflow from that is really where I think we can, you know, hopefully do some good and propel folks into some of these other areas.
Yeah, I saw Mac is actually going to do something with that case too. I think she's doing some DNA testing on that
car. Yep.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Do you find yourself captivated by the inexplicable, entranced by enigmas, and tantalized by the unknown? We are Shane and Josh Waters, brothers who will weave you through tales that have mystified us for years. From haunted hotels to inexplicable disappearances,
our episodes offer you a panoramic view of the world's greatest mysteries, leaving no stone unturned, no clue unnoticed.
With a gripping narrative, we invite you to join us on a journey into realms of the unexplained.
We're unraveling the mysteries that have perplexed humanity for ages.
So, armchair detectives, curious minds, and seekers of the strange, it's time to put on your headphones and dim the lights.
Dive into the uncanny world of the Mystery Inc. podcast and prepare for a journey into the unknown that you'll never forget. And remember, some mysteries are better left unsolved, but not unexplored. Gather round, friend, and join me by the fire. I have a secret to share. When I was a child, I lived with my grandma. She allowed me to watch unsolved mysteries. Fast forward to 2008, my freshman year of college. A series of armed robberies on campus escalated into a serial rapist's reign of terror. That's when I created my first crime podcast. In January 2014, I picked up the podcast again from my college roommate who fell for an underage girl online, to the chilling story of a murdered nun in 1969 Baltimore, and in the Throwaway series, I share my own journey of overcoming homelessness and how that experience led me to unmask a serial killer and identify three of his Jane Doe victims. This is Foul Play Crime Series, where the stories are real and the truth is waiting to be discovered.
How's it going, everyone? It's Tim and Lance here. Have you ever wanted someone to read you creepy bedtime stories in the most velvety voice ever?
Well, you had me hooked at velvety, Tim. We are excited to share a podcast that is exactly that. It's called Nighty Night Bedtime Stories to Keep You Awake. And Tim, it's narrated by a friend of ours.
That's right. New York Times bestselling author and podcaster, Rabia Chaudhry. Nighty Night is an anthology featuring classic horror stories this season and fictionalized true life stories in season one that are so creepy that you will realize reality is scarier than fiction.
And Tim, I know our favorite part of each episode is at the end when Rabia says, but wait, there's more to the story. And we get to hear those fascinating details about the author and the context of the tale. What's your favorite episode?
My favorite episode is The Tiny Hares from season one, which takes us on a harrowing journey when the narrator runs into a dangerous man in the woods. What about you?
Well, mine comes from the current season. It's called The Horla, in which we witness the protagonist spiral into a descent of madness. Tim, I feel like I'm constantly spiraling into a descent of madness, so I really relate to that one.
Well, I hear that. So dim your lights, get under a cozy blanket, and find and subscribe to Nighty Night wherever you get your podcasts.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Nighty Night, everyone.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. David Robinson had messaged us, I want to say the night before or a couple of nights before, and I think he sent some messages to other creators too and tried to set up additional interviews while the conference was going on, while he wasn't on stage. And that was just such a great way for him to take advantage of the opportunity to speak with people, to spread the word as far as he could. Very admirable job, and I think he's a great leader in that way.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, and he's providing a template for other families. And I think we all realize now that the atmosphere and the environment's changed, that, you know, if you're unfortunately a victim or a family of a victim or, you know, related to a case, you do need to take charge. Not to say you're getting in the way of anything that's happening on the police side or whatever, but you need to be your own advocate and make sure that you are the squeaky wheel and you are getting the grease. And that's the way the world works. You know, I do feel like the event can help. I mean, even the John Ramsey stuff, right? I mean, it's obviously an extraordinarily well-known case and it's been around a very long time, but even a case like that goes and like no one's talking about it unless there's something to talk about. How do you bring things like that back into the headlines and make sure that, you know, again, a family should get justice?
It's funny you bring up John Ramsey, because at the very end of everything, I think we had just spoken to you. We were walking away with a couple of friends who we know through CrimeCon, and one of them was like, oh, that's John Ramsey. And he was there with his representative. We just walked over and we asked him if he would be interested in coming on our show. And he was like, yeah, no one's really asked me to come on a podcast before. And we're like, really? You?
Wild.
I just think that that's a testament to what we're talking about with the people coming together at this event, and someone like John Ramsey, who's been around for decades, for him to be like, I've never been asked to be on a podcast.
Yeah, after you just bump into him.
Yeah, and you can just bump into him.
What were your favorite presentations at this year's CrimeCon?
I've literally not seen one.
I was just going to say, I didn't see one session.
I sat in the back of a couple. I was there for the beginning of Dateline. I had seen the opening video that they played when they sent it to me for approval prior, and it was like incredible. All the mentions of Dateline and pop culture. So I wanted to see what the crowd reaction to that was. I did watch the entire Ramsey presentation because obviously I was concerned about any behavioral issues, you know, any security issues and things like that. I had the unenviable task of being the person in the back of the room at the tech table that would have to make a call, you know, should anything happen, whether it's someone standing up and trying to shout Mr. Ramsey down, or protesters, or someone tries to take the state, whatever the case may be of sort of how do we handle it? And we needed kind of one decision maker. So yeah, I wouldn't say I enjoyed that presentation, because the entire time I was just, you know, if something happens, how am I going to react quickly? Keep everybody safe and informed. And, you know, are we going to end the session? Are we going to pause the session? What are we going to do? Except for the Clue Awards. I was there for the whole Clue Awards because Elise allowed me to sit and eat dinner and enjoy it. So that was great.
I'm not bitter at all. What about you? Did you guys see any sessions?
Yeah, we saw Donna Green speak, and we saw David Robinson speak. And then we saw some of the podcasts row, the Glassbox stage there. We saw some presentations there, Crime Door and a few others, Nancy Grace. Yeah, it was great. It did seem a little bit different this year than years past. It seemed a little shorter, the presentations possibly. And also there were more moderators maybe, or they spent more time out there, at least in the two that we saw. With Donna and David, the moderator spoke before they brought on the guest.
Yeah, there's a few takeaways that came out. We do, as you guys know, we do a pretty extensive survey every year, and we really take those, you know, you can't, you, we do read everything, but you can't take any one individual comment as gospel. When you start to see themes, that's where, you know, it resonates for us. And we obviously try to make event changes based on that. You know, one of the things that we're thinking about seriously is going back to a full hour on the presentations. We've adjusted this a lot over the years. We've toyed with a whole bunch of different formats, but I think we've kind of settled on, we like the 20 minutes between sessions. It gives everyone a chance to relax a little bit, get coffee, go to the bathroom, find a new seat. And then to sort of compensate, because it used to be 10 minutes between presentations, we went from 60 minutes to 50 minutes so that we didn't lose speaking blocks. Because when you do out the whole grid, if you go 20 minutes between and hour long, you ultimately end up having less presentations. I think that that's a reasonable thing, is like less is more maybe. And as long as they're like, give them a little bit more time to breathe and give people time to breathe between them. Even if we lose a few over the course of the weekend, the ones you're in will feel a little bit more impactful.
Yeah, I'm definitely nodding when you're saying that, because it didn't feel as much of a whirlwind as it usually is felt when you show up for CrimeCon, as like the in the capacity that we show up, where you set up and then it's like people, session, people, and then on Sunday you're just like, what happened? I mean, there was a lot going on, but it did feel like I can take a breath here.
Yeah.
And we had time to interview David Robinson, like literally in the hall in between sessions.
Yeah.
So we had time to think about those things and do those things, which again comes back to like it being a very productive weekend, because it didn't feel like it was just nonstop.
I don't know there's a perfect answer, but we'll, and some of it's the venue, you know, I mean, Orlando, it is a very large space, but it is one floor and you'll be able to get around easy, you know, 15 minutes might work. There was obviously still COVID concerns this year, and you wanted to make sure that people could have ample time for cleaning or going to wash their hands or grabbing a mask.
Yeah,
or
I was
going to
say the first year that we did the 20 minute breaks was Austin, and it was for COVID because we wanted to spread people out and have time to clean and everything. And then everyone loved the 20 minutes.
But I think Indy was like, I think it was 50 minute sessions with 10 minute breaks. Nashville, I think we went to an hour. New Orleans, we might have gone back down. So it's been all over the place. The thing is, we spend so much time making sure the sessions are going to be good, right? Who are the right speakers and the right people on stage? And are the presentations good? And our team works specifically. We can't change the presentation, but we try to help the speaker make the presentation as good as possible. When you do that much work on it, then if you want Q&A at the end and say that's 15 minutes, if it's a 50-minute session, right, you're really down to like a 35-minute presentation. And to your point, if a moderator is introing them, 30 minutes is not a long time when you have someone really interesting doing like a presentation on a case file. I like the idea of a little bit longer and see how that kind of goes.
I wasn't initially a fan of how Podcast Row was set up, with the glass box stage being where the podcasters did their live shows. And I was really nervous when we were about to do our first one, because I thought that all of the activity I thought was going to take away from that, and it totally didn't. And I totally did a 180 the second anyone on our panel opened their mouth, and you could hear it, and you could see people sitting there, and you could see people buzzing around. So there's this energy beyond it. People could hear you, and then people that were walking by, they would pop in, they would start listening, then other people would start coming in. And it was a lot better than when you're doing one of these events and you know you're going away to this like breakout room. You know, you might get like 15 people trickling in or 30 people trickling in, and you kind of lose like an energy when you're just in this closed box and you start thinking to yourself like, well, what else are they at right now?
I'm glad that that's the way it felt in the room, because I think if anyone listening has ever been to like a professional conference, American Academy of XYZ, you know, from the conference organizer's perspective and from the business model, that expo hall, the key thing is, how do you get people into this expo hall? We have less of that problem because people are honestly interested not only in the podcasters, but in the book publishers and the media companies, et cetera, et cetera. So we've always had good flow in there. But I think the idea that you're going to put programming in the expo hall, and so the people that are coming in for programming are then providing this energy for the room. And then after the programming, they probably mill around. Like, I think it just works well. And we, you know, we're going to make a few changes in terms of acoustics and sound overflow and stuff. But I think we really like the idea of a stage in there.
So Glassbox is sort of the new company representing podcasters. They're representing us. And it was their first time, at our suggestion, to contact you folks and see what they could do to represent. What's your take?
I'm going to let Elise handle this, because as you guys know, Elise has a very high bar for liking people that we work with.
And, I mean, I think I can wrap it up in two words, which is great guys.
Okay.
They're awesome. Great guys. Yeah, they're great to work with. I think they're really happy with the sponsorship, and hopefully they'll be in Orlando.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
Step into the hidden corridors of the past with Hometown History, where every episode uncovers the untold stories and secrets nestled in the streets and alleys of our own backyards. We bring history to life, revealing the extraordinary in the ordinary, from local legends to forgotten tales that shape the communities we know today. Tune in to Hometown History and embark on a journey through time, right from where you are.
Rex Sherman is a demon that walks among us, a predator that ruined families.
The LISK, Long Island Serial Killer Podcast, was shocked when the news broke of Rex Huerman's arrest. After more than a decade of searching, law enforcement officials had finally pieced together enough evidence to bring formal charges against Rex Huerman. Initially charged with 3 murders, Huerman is now officially charged with all 4 deaths in the Gilgo 4 case. I'm your host, Chris Moss, and the LISK podcast will be releasing new episodes with interviews and fresh insight on the case as Rex Huerman awaits trial in Long Island. While we are relieved by the arrest, the LISK podcast team will be working hard to share new developments and perspectives as we get them. So please keep your eyes and ears out for new episodes, and if you haven't already, please listen to seasons 1 and 2 of LISK, Long Island Serial Killer, wherever you listen to podcasts.
And a thank you to our sponsors. Back to the program.
What does the future hold for CrimeCon?
Sleep.
No, I don't.
SleepCon. So the next thing for us, we launched the Clue Awards this year. That was like the big new initiative for Vegas. And that was a, you know, planting a flag and saying, hey, there needs to be some recognition of the creators in this community, the podcasters, docs, books, TV. No one's focused specifically on true crime, right? You can be up for an award in a category that's maybe parallel. But the reaction we got from that, from the creators and the media companies and everybody else was super positive. We got a lot of nominations in. We got a really world-class judging panel, I felt. And then the show itself, it was a first-year show, but I think by and large, the reviews on the show were very positive. People felt like that emotional connection when the Black and Missing Foundation came up at the end and told their story and played their video. I mean, there was, you know, literal tears. To answer the question, that's one thing that we want to continue to expand out and grow and, you know, hopefully turn it into a really a marquee award show. As CrimeCon's grown, the more and more of the business side is happening there. Producers are there, networks are there, pods are there, folks like Glassbox are there, right? And so we're all dealing with the same stuff, the same issues regarding everything from distribution to advertisers, et cetera, right? So there's a lot of learning, I think, that can happen from the creator community and the business community at CrimeCon that we're not formalizing right now. Right now it's happening in you know, bar conversations and stuff. So I'd love to expand that out and really how do we help the creator side meet each other, network better, answer these questions that we're all dealing with in terms of respect and ethics and all of those sort of things that are central to everything that we do. So to me, that's another key piece in the growth. And then I think event-wise, you know, we did our first crime cruise in 2021. We have our second one coming up in 2023. The inaugural one was obviously, to call it impacted by COVID would be an understatement, but was influenced by COVID. I think it's a really fun balance to the land-based crime con in that we've got 5,000 people plus in this conference center for a weekend. Crime Cruise, even if you go to CrimeCon sits along with it because it's a much, much smaller group, way more intimate with the speakers. It's a much smaller speaker roster. And then you're combining, you know, more of the fun elements, murder mystery games and, you know, bingo and trivia and those sorts of things, not to mention an awesome cruise ship and ports of call and all that stuff. So I like the idea of growing that to the point where we sort of are a 2-event-a-year schedule. I've never been to an event on a cruise ship, but I have been on cruises and I've seen people with their badges and lanyards. And I was like, oh, how fun is this? You get to go to an event and you get a vacation out of it. And a lot of the logistical things we deal with, food, staffing, security, AV, on a cruise ship, it's all there, right? Yeah. So from our standpoint, we get to focus on what we want to focus on, which is programming. So we get to pick the best speakers, work with them on the presentations and the cases. Unlike a crime con, when you've got a group of people that you know is going to be there for 4 straight days in all of these sessions, you can do a single case and follow it through. So you can really do deeper dives into some of this stuff. At night, we all have these group dinners and everyone's in the piano bar. And, you know, it's a fun community. Like I felt on that first crime cruise, the sense of community there was really, really strong. So I think, yeah, I don't know. Are you making fun of it?
No, not at all.
You want to go because you want the crawl space dinghy.
I was getting to the crawl space crime dinghy.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to put this out to the masses and have them petition CrimeCon to have the crawl space dinghy. Just, you know, in a nutshell, for those who are listening, it would be Tim and I rowing guests who have probably VIP level badge.
Yeah, the VIPs definitely want to be rowed in a dinghy out to the big ship.
By two guys who don't have a lot of experience.
They might not even know. Yeah.
They're not going to make it. I think my other question, just visually, we need to maybe someone needs to Photoshop this for us, but if you look at a cruise ship, you board on like level
it's
five.
It's probably like seven or eight.
Your rowboat, there's nowhere to get. I don't know where someone's boarding.
There would be a rope. It would be like a rope
they
ladder.
Climb the ladder.
Like I would have to stand there with the rope. I'll be on the boat and I'll, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking.
It's hard for me to see that as VIP though. If you're
maybe it's non-VIP.
You got to like climb a rope to get.
Your perk of VIP is that you can board regularly.
We go the other way and it's below the standard badge.
Yeah. Now I think.
We have to introduce a new badge type.
Yeah.
It's the pirate badge.
It's the dinghy badge.
Oh.
Yeah.
The pirate badge. Yeah.
Yeah. So for $30, you can risk your life to get out there.
It's good.
And we can dress up like pirates too.
You guys chose the wrong careers.
What difference would that be?
This is, you guys should be doing event planning.
No, I was definitely not making fun of it. I just like the idea of
the dinghy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great idea.
Maybe it's an excursion. So, you know, when we pull up into Cozumel, a certain group who's chosen this specifically so that there's not lawsuits gets into the rowboats and you guys roam around.
Or it could be people that you don't really want at CrimeCon. And then we kind of just get lost.
Lost at sea.
Lost at sea.
There's no one we don't want at CrimeCon. Come on.
Well, speaking of that, I had a question about security. When you're planning these crime-centric events, if it's the crowd solve, the cruise, or CrimeCon itself, where do you start with security? Just talking to people, a lot of them express, not surprise, but they're always like, it's interesting that you're at an event that's about crime and nothing ever happens.
Well, in some ways, you'd have to be pretty dumb to go to crime. You know, in some ways, I feel like it's a real safe environment because what would be the point of going to CrimeCon to commit an actual crime? I mean, everybody's there. Actual working detectives and FBI, and not let alone our security, but just the people who are there, right? I mean, it's almost like what they always talk about with big threat events and the Super Bowl and everything else, right? Like, if you were going to do something, there's a lot easier ways to do something. That said, obviously I can't discuss the specific security stuff, but obviously it's always on our mind in terms of, you know, not only protecting specific talent who might have a specific instance where there's, you know, people who have made threats against them or whatever, but yeah, fans in general. I mean, to be honest, the stuff that's usually that we spend the most time thinking about and dealing with is more of the run-of-the-mill disruptors. Luckily, maybe not lucky for people who are listening, but as you guys all know, it's a fairly high-priced event. You know, this isn't a cheap ticket. And I hate to say it this way, but in a lot of cases, there's some disruptors who are just like, they would normally go if it was $19, but it's a little too expensive for me to go disrupt. Someone's got to buy a ticket, be willing to come in, obviously be willing to be thrown out and potentially arrested once they do their disruption. But I think that's where we spend a lot of our time is, hey, I don't care if someone disrupts it, as long as we take care of it professionally, responsibly, and don't impact the experience for everybody else who's trying to enjoy it. Also, as we talked about, like John Ramsey, we just talked about, and obviously that's no secret, that was one that was on my mind in terms of disruptors. You know, the thought occurs that it's going to be a self-policing audience in a lot of ways. So let's say that we're all sitting there watching John. By and large, 99% of people who come are respectful and passionate and enthusiastic, and whether or not they agree with the speaker, they're there to hear and to listen and to be educated. And I think if you stood up with a sign and started yelling, the first thing that would happen is that everybody around you would start yelling at you to sit down. You know, and I feel really good about the crowd that we've cultivated, that they'll be the first line of just defense for sort of that side of an issue, a disruptor issue. And then obviously we've got our protocols beyond that.
What about CrowdSolve?
Elise, you haven't spoken in a while.
No. Not right now.
We get asked about it a lot. They're really hard to put together, not from just an event planning perspective, but from a finding a case that is not, we have never wanted these to be BS.
Yeah.
A real case that has a real chance of being solved, a real high solvability factor, a police department that is willing to open up the case file and say, help. A family that is willing to say, we're in for whatever you guys need. This, you know, these are challenging.
Yeah.
I think it would be more if we're presented with the right case that would trigger us to want to do one. Right now we're doing on Crime HQ, we're having fun spending a lot of time in a cold case club, which is like a very mini crowd solve. So we've got a case in there right now that's playing out over a number of weeks. And we do a similar thing. We bring in the experts and the detectives and the family and attendees engage over Zoom and we provide case file information, et cetera. Yeah, in terms of an in-person event, obviously COVID derailed it. I mean, remember our last one was February 2021, a month before everything blew up in 2020, sorry, in Chicago. That was the one that Selena Gomez came to with her mom. And Selena's wearing a mask in February. And it was kind of like blowing my mind. Like, what does she know and everything? And then I don't know, she got tipped off or something, yeah. But yeah, she was on it. She knew even at that point.
Selena Gomez, was she there in preparation for Only Murders in the Building?
She says no.
Really? Well,
yeah. This was, her mom is lovely. I've spoken to her at length and, you know, this was a girl's trip. This was a mom-daughter trip. You know, now knowing what we know that she was doing the show, maybe, I'm not sure what prep would have come on it other than maybe her seeing how other sort of citizen detectives. I will also say, I mean, I met Selena. She was very gracious, but she was also very into it. Yeah. I mean, she had her notebook and she was, you know, she was as into it as anybody else. So I tend to believe, yeah, this was a vacation.
And Selena's mom came to Austin, I think. And she was sharing like pictures on social of like composites and everything. She's very into it.
Yeah, and she's a producer of her own right in Hollywood. She did 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, okay. Oh, very cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun to have them and fun to watch the lack of recognition for the first couple of days. And then the sort of like word started getting out. I think that's Selena Gomez. I think that we were obviously concerned, right? So we pushed it as far as we could until it became clear that that she was there. But
that the only person wearing a mask was Selena Gomez.
Is Steve Martin and Martin Short going to be in Orlando?
We'll
we need a season 3 probably for that to happen. Are you guys watching the show?
I love it.
Yeah, it's a great show.
It's so good.
It's a great show. My only question is, when are you planning on going to Boston?
Don't get me started. It's my number one choice. You know, I'm a Boston guy. We've been up and down on the venues there. We can't find something. So none of the hotels are large enough.
Ah, right.
And the Heinz Convention Center is in the midst of a big sort of transformation. Yeah. Basically, the only hotels we can fit in now are Las Vegas, Orlando, and Gaylord properties, which are built for these size of events. So we're really sort of, you know, again, not to give you too much inside baseball, we're struggling with, it's a good problem to have, but how do you maintain the experience we want to maintain when we're limited by these venues? And obviously the answer is go to a convention center. But if you guys have been to events at convention centers, you know, it's very different. You know, you're in a sort of a soulless big warehouse type building. It's not the ballrooms that we all like. And for events that aren't like expo driven, they're stage and programming driven, I've always struggled with how to make that work in the convention center world.
Thank you guys very much.
Yeah, really, thanks for coming in. Yeah.
Letting us invade your space again.
Anytime.
When we started it, and then, you know, we got two in, and then COVID, and then, or three in, and then COVID, and we always wanted to make a plan to come here with, you know, a few months or weeks after, just to do a little recap. Just love the idea of doing that.
We so love it.
Great to be back to do that.
We'll see you guys on the dinghy.
You said it. It's recording.
Thank you.